Good day. It's Wednesday, May 8th. I'm Phil Picardi, and this is the NPR News Update podcast. Coming up, the same-sex marriage debate both in and out of the state capitol. Also, jobs and the economy top the list of concerns shared by rural Minnesotans. And a young woman of science wants to go from Minneapolis to Mars. First, the Minnesota House has scheduled a vote on a bill that would legalize same-sex marriage. That vote will take place tomorrow at the state capitol. Democrats who control the House believe they have enough votes to pass the bill. Here's our Tom Scheck.
DFL House leaders have said they weren't going to hold a vote on the bill unless they were certain it would pass. After months of behind-the-scenes lobbying, DFL House Majority Leader Aaron Murphy says the House is now poised to legalize same-sex marriage in Minnesota.
Our members have worked very hard in their districts talking with Minnesotans about their perspective, and I think they've, you know, searched their conscience, and they are prepared to take this question up. And so we'll go in, and of course, members will cast their vote, and that will be the moment, but we feel confident at this point that we have the votes.
In recent days, several Democrats representing rural Minnesota districts have signaled that they will vote for the bill, but some acknowledge their vote will come with a political risk.
It could cost me the election because I come from a very conservative area.
DFL Representative Shannon Savick of Wells says she didn't hesitate when asked whether she would support the bill. She says she's standing on her principles and mentioned that her younger brother is gay.
I watched my brother being discriminated against when he was younger. He's a younger brother than I am, and I just don't see why he can't marry the person he loves. I did.
House DFL leaders say they're hoping that several Republicans will vote for the bill, but they say they don't need GOP votes to pass it. Only one Republican, Senator Brandon Peterson of Andover, has publicly said he'll vote for the bill. Some others, like Representative Tim Kelly of Red Wing, say they'll continue to push for an alternative bill that would allow for civil unions. Kelly says he intends to offer the civil union language as an amendment during the House floor debate.
My message has been consistent from day one. We should not be defining marriage in statute. And if we're all about protecting marriage, then this is what we should be doing.
Kelly says he won't vote for the bill if his amendment isn't included. The House vote has been critical to both supporters and opponents of the same-sex marriage bill. That's because DFL Senate Majority Leader Tom Bach has said there are enough votes to pass the bill in the Senate. Governor Dayton has also said he strongly supports the bill. Richard Carlbaum, campaign manager for Minnesotans United, which has been lobbying for the bill's passage, called Thursday's scheduled vote historic. He said he hopes some Republicans will back the bill once it comes time to vote.
The vote that will be taken in the House on Thursday will be a vote that will be remembered for the next 100 years. And with that kind of historical significance, I think it's a vote that I think every member of the legislature will carefully consider.
The Senate version of the bill made its final stop before a floor vote in the Finance Committee. The committee approved the bill today after discussing its fiscal impact. Finance officials say the bill will cost Minnesota taxpayers nearly $700,000 a year because some state workers will add same-sex partners to their state health insurance. The analysis also found that there will be a boost in marriage license fees of about $190,000 if the bill becomes law. Opponents of the legislation say they're not giving up their efforts to defeat the bill. Republican Senator Warren Limmer of Maple Grove warned some House members will lose their re-election campaigns because of this vote.
I would behoove all legislators to go back to their district and find out what is the overwhelming opinion of their people, because I believe in many cases the public will hold them directly responsible in November's election next year regarding the Minnesota House majority.
A spokesman for the Minnesota Senate says if the House passes the bill on Thursday, the earliest the Senate could take up the same-sex marriage bill is Saturday. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News. At the Capitol.
As the bill to legalize same-sex marriage picks up momentum, our Sasha Aslanian discussed the issue with supporters and opponents.
Steve Davis of Marshall voted with a majority last November not to amend Minnesota's constitution to define marriage as between a man and a woman. Davis wanted some time to think about what was best, and he's not ready for lawmakers to take what he sees as an all-or-nothing vote on the issue.
I see it as a steamroller. It looks like it is just coming through, you know, whether society's ready for it or not. And And boy, that just, you know, seems too bad to me, given last year, you know, what I heard was, well, we'll put it on the back burner and cross this bridge later on or not, as we decide at the time.
Davis now describes himself as a hardened opponent to same-sex marriage. Yet 2 years ago, he had hoped for some sort of compromise between the two sides.
You know, thought that civil unions would be a pretty reasonable compromise to the what folks have brought up, that, you know, you want to be able to see somebody in the hospital and this sort of thing, you know, without making it an inflamed issue.
But the marriage vote looks entirely different to Greg Krausert, a gay man from Rochester, who was that person trying to see his partner in the hospital. Krausert says he used to think marriage didn't matter. Then, when he was living in San Diego, his partner of 15 years had a heart attack. The hospital wouldn't let him into the room until he could track down his partner's sister for permission.
To not be able to go in and hold my partner's hands when he's in the hospital dying, you know, thinking he's dying, it just made me change my perspective. And these people that think, oh, you know, it's going to be the end of the earth. The end of the earth is when the person you love is alone.
Though Minnesota law does allow patients to designate a partner to visit, there are many other reasons Krausert wants the protection of marriage, and he's optimistic he'll be able to marry in his home state.
It's going to happen. And, you know, Minnesota has always been a progressive leader and always out front. And unfortunately, we're not going to be in the top 10 states that pass marriage equality, but, you know, number 11 wouldn't be bad.
But another Rochester resident has deep concerns about that happening.
I voted for traditional marriage.
Amy Tremaine says she cares about her gay friends and a relative, but she thinks that allowing same-sex couples to marry would lead to more children being raised in same-gendered households.
I'm just really concerned that somebody would bring a child on purpose into a home where there will never be a role model of one gender. I think that's very sad, and children do crave that mother figure and that father figure. It's the world is made of male and females, and the home is that microcosm of where children can learn how to relate to people of both genders.
It's that view that worries Eileen Scallon of Minneapolis. While Scallon is thrilled about the prospect of being able to marry her partner of 16 years, she fears moving too quickly could lead to a backlash.
There's still a lot of people that are trying to get their minds to catch up with the reality of same-sex couples raising children. And so I worry that we haven't come far enough in educating people. But at the same time, I feel the excitement that is pending. I'm thinking about scheduling a hall for the fall if this goes through.
Scallon says there's a power to marriage that both sides understand, and that's why this issue cuts so deep.
There is a meaning to marriage that is just beyond any concept of domestic partnership and beyond any concept of civil union that everybody gets. And it's partly because of that that people are fighting so hard to keep what they view as the traditional view of marriage. But it's also why people are fighting so hard, like me, to get those full marriage equality rights.
Regardless of whether the bill passes or fails, many Minnesotans who responded to NPR News expect the conversation about same-sex marriage in Minnesota, whether they want it or not, will continue.
Sasha Aslanian on the NPR News Update, Minnesota's news on your schedule. The city of St. Paul's decision to withdraw from a Supreme Court case was the subject of a heated hearing yesterday in the U.S. House. Brett Neely has more.
St. Paul was set to take part in a Supreme Court case that could have overturned a legal theory that the government's used for 40 years to fight racial discrimination. But the city pulled out of the appeal, preventing a big decision. Republicans claim that Labor Secretary nominee Thomas Perez was responsible for the city's change of heart. They say in exchange for dropping the suit, Perez withdrew the Justice Department's support for a whistleblower suit that could have cost St. Paul millions. Democrats, including Jerry Nadler of New York, say the charges aren't true.
This is at best a policy disagreement, at worst simply partisan politics.
Republican Patrick McHenry of North Carolina said the episode shows Perez doesn't deserve a promotion.
I ask my colleagues on the other side of the Capitol building to think twice about Mr. Perez's nomination.
Brett Neely, Minnesota Public Radio News, Washington.
Minneapolis City Councilmember Robert Lilligren is asking the DFL party to rescind its endorsement of his challenger. The Minneapolis DFL endorsed Abdi Warsami last month to run for Lilligren's seat on the city council. But Lilligren says the endorsement process and the precinct caucuses that preceded it were flawed.
There was a lot of chaos, a lack of control by the party officials. My opponent's campaign in many places were actually controlling the caucus.
For his part, Abdi Warsami says he won the endorsement fairly because of his superior grassroots organization. Warsami calls Lilligren's accusations unfounded.
We won because we campaigned hard, we campaigned fairly. We had a message, an inclusive message, a message of hope that galvanized the community and brought people out to the caucuses, and many for the first time.
The state DFL party says endorsement challenges are fairly routine, but they rarely succeed in overturning results. A party committee will consider the challenge later this summer. Robert Lilligren is one of four incumbent DFLers on the city council in Minneapolis who have lost party endorsements this year. Police in Eden Prairie say they have found DNA from a missing woman and a blood sample found in her ex-boyfriend's vehicle. Matt Sepik has more on that.
The family of 24-year-old Mandy Matula reported her missing Thursday morning after she didn't show up for work. Matula was last seen a week ago. Police say she was with David Rowe, whom she'd once dated. Rowe shot himself Thursday and later died after Eden Prairie police called him in for questioning. Police also say an unfired bullet found near Miller Park was at some point in the chamber of the gun Rowe used to kill himself. Authorities say they're continuing to search specific areas of Eden Prairie and also Carver and Stearns counties based on evidence collected from Rowe's vehicle, cell phone, and computer.
That's Matt Sepik. Critics of frack sand mining in southeastern Minnesota confronted Republican State Senator Jeremy Miller of Winona at the state capitol yesterday. They want him to support measures to protect the region from possible environmental harm from the industry, including a bill that would require mines to be set back at least a mile from trout streams. Miller has said that distance is arbitrary.
Let's be accurate here. There was no vote on any moratorium or GEIS. There was no vote.
But you did not support.
Could have spoken out.
I did not have an opportunity to vote on that provision.
But you could have supported.
That's an out.
Yes.
You're just taking the easy way out.
Those critics want Miller to support a statewide moratorium on sand mining and a generic environmental impact study. The moose population at Voyageurs National Park near International Falls is holding steady. Dan Crocker says that's in sharp contrast to elsewhere in northern Minnesota.
Voyageurs wildlife biologists estimate the moose population in the park at 46 animals. That's about the same as the most recent estimates from 2009 through 2011. In northeast Minnesota, though, the population of a gangly, iconic species has plummeted by more than a third since last year and more than half since 2010. In response, the DNR canceled the moose hunt this year and has launched a $1.2 million study to try to figure out what's killing the huge creature. They're tracking about 100 adult moose, and later this month will begin coloring newborn calves. Voyager's researchers are conducting their own separate mortality study. They stress that climate change and disease outbreaks continue to threaten the long-term viability of the small moose population in the park.
Dan Crocker reporting there from Duluth. The Department of Natural Resources has a new trick in the fight against invasive zebra mussels. Here's Elizabeth Dunbar to tell us what that trick is.
Good. Good.
Digger, the black lab, has just sniffed out zebra mussels hidden inside a boat trailer's taillight. The dog is one of three the DNR plans to use this spring and summer to find the invasive species on boats being hauled into and out of Minnesota lakes. More than 100 of the state's lakes and rivers are already infested with the tiny mussels. They can clog water intake pipes, cut swimmers' feet, and disrupt natural ecosystems. The DNR will also have up to 150 human inspectors at boat launches this year. But officials say the dogs are probably more efficient. California already uses dogs to detect zebra mussels and has found a dog can inspect a boat 5 to 15 times faster than a human. Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News, Fort Snelling State Park.
Elizabeth Dunbar going to the dogs on the NPR News Update. The former leader of the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra is returning to his old job. The SPCO announced it's recommending Bruce Kopic to reassume his former position of president and general manager beginning in June. Kopic led the SPCO from 1999 to 2008. He left the orchestra after being diagnosed with a rare form of cancer, which is now in remission. Kopic says healing an ensemble that's been through a bitter labor dispute will be a challenge, but he does believe that he can provide a steady hand as manager and leader.
For all of the difficulties of the past year, and we all know this has been an extremely difficult year, the SPCO is a wonderful orchestra, and it's a wonderful organization. And I believe firmly that there's a very bright future for the orchestra, and that's why I took the job.
Kopic will replace interim president Dobson West. The SPCO board is expected to ratify Kopic's hiring May the 21st. Jobs and the economy remain the top concerns for rural Minnesotans in a new survey released today. The Blandin Foundation's Rural Pulse Survey found urban residents are more optimistic about the economy. Here's Tom Robertson with a look.
Blandin's latest survey shows that demand for living wage jobs far outweighs all other concerns in the state, including education and health care. This year, for the first time, the survey included both rural and urban residents. It found that nearly 60% of rural Minnesotans and about 40% of urban residents say there aren't enough local job opportunities. Kathleen Annette is president of the Grand Rapids-based foundation, which is a funder of Minnesota Public Radio. Annette says the survey shows Minnesotans remain optimistic about the future, but that many people, especially in rural Minnesota, are still worried about the economy.
Recovery hasn't made it to all people. And there are those in the rural communities that have less optimism, and those are primarily those that are making less than $35,000 a year, and they're older than the age of 35.
56% of rural respondents believe their local economy is the same as it was last year. 20% think it's worse. 61-year-old Mark Bublitz participated in the survey. He's a mental health worker from Brainerd, a town that at the height of the recession saw the highest unemployment rate in the state. Bublitz is among those who agree the post-recession economy is still a big problem in greater Minnesota.
I think there's a lot of people that are exceptionally stressed, and those people that have weathered the storm kind of financially and employment-wise, I think are feeling a little less pressure than they were before, but there's a lot of folks that haven't weathered that still are living, I think, check to check.
Most survey participants gave high marks to their quality of life, and most say their community is a vibrant place to live and work. The survey shows political clout is a concern in rural Minnesota. A third of people say they believe lawmakers pay less attention to the needs of rural Minnesota than to those in the metro area. That includes 63-year-old Gretchen Ramlow, a retired businesswoman from Austin, Minnesota. Ramlow says she's satisfied with her local elected officials, but believes the legislature as a whole isn't as responsive.
When you talk about rural Minnesota, I think that oftentimes our policymakers forget about rural Minnesota and for the outstate areas. You know, very rarely do they come out and have their meetings here, talk to us. I think the majority of the people think about the metro area.
Rural advocates say Blandin's latest survey provides another set of useful data that speak to rural concerns. Brad Finstead is president of the Center for Rural Policy and Development, based in St. Peter. Finstead says the study suggests that rural communities need to work more closely together to face shared challenges.
We're not in a world where we can survive just trying to protect and grow our own little corner of the rural part of Minnesota. We need to think more globally, think more regionally, more collaboratively as we work on different issues that advance rural Minnesota.
This is Blandin's fourth Rural Pulse survey since the effort began in 1998. Additional information that focuses on the perceptions of various racial groups in the state will be released this summer.
NPR's Tom Robertson there in Bemidji. We close out the podcast with the voice of a young aspiring astronaut in Minneapolis who wants to go to Mars. Next week, she'll go to Kazakhstan, almost as far away as Mars, to watch a Russian Soyuz rocket carrying her Italian mentor on a launch as he heads for the International Space Station. His name is Luca Parmitano, and the two of them met a couple of years ago. Abby Harrison is the student, a sophomore from Minneapolis South High School, and Kathy Werzer spoke to her on Morning Edition.
Now, I recall following your tweets a couple of years ago when you watched the Florida launch of the Space Shuttle Endeavor, I believe. How'd you end up doing that?
I went to watch the launch of Space Shuttle Endeavor STS-134 as kind of a tale on a History Day project that I was doing, where it had been about the International Space Station, and researching that and really getting involved with that really piqued my interest in the manned space program that we currently had and led to me finding an interest in the shuttle program and eventually going to launch one.
And I know you met the astronaut Luca Parmitano at the airport in Orlando, Florida. You've been in touch since. Would you call him your mentor?
Yeah, I would call Luca my mentor. We've been in contact since I met him, and he's given me some amazing advice and help as I journey towards this goal.
Now, what's your fascination with space?
My fascination with space is something that's just always been there for me. Ever since I was really young, I remember looking up at the night sky and just thinking that someday I wanted to go there. And as I started to get older and my curiosity turned more into an interest in science, I started to become really fascinated not only with the wonder of space, but also with the technical side, the fact that there are so many mysteries out there that could be unlocked by researching in space.
I know you're taking a lot of STEM classes at Minneapolis South. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. But a lot of kids shy away from science and math. Why do you think that is?
I think a lot of kids shy away from science and math because they're hard. And in the school system, we put so much emphasis on what grade you get instead of how much you learn. So if it's harder to get a good grade in a science or math class, you're not going to want to take it.
So now you're bolstering what you're learning in class with this amazing trip to Kazakhstan. What will you get to do in Kazakhstan?
In Kazakhstan, we're just going to be around the launch site. And I'm really excited because I've heard that once you get all the clearances to go into the launch site and everything, it's a lot more open than it is at a shuttle launching, where you can really get close to the infrastructure and see what's going on.
Now, will you get to see Luca Parmitano before he blasts off?
Yeah, we get to be part of the final goodbye to the astronauts, which they're in quarantine, both for like their mental health, just to have a period of calm before the launch, and also their physical health, so that they're not taking any pathogens up into space with them. So it won't be in person, it'll be behind a glass wall.
And probably envision yourself behind the glass someday.
Yeah.
Now, I understand you'll be contacting him, but you'll be in contact with him while he's up in space, and he'll be connecting with you regularly. Will people be able to follow that through Twitter and Facebook?
Yeah, I'm going to be his Earth liaison, which means he'll be emailing me every day with information and stories and pictures from the International Space Station. People can stay connected to this by either following my Twitter, my Facebook, or going to my website, where I'll be writing regularly about it, as well as having a column called Ask Luca.
All right. I know you have to get back to class, Abby. Thank you, and good luck with your trip.
Thank you, Kathy.
That's Abby Harrison and Kathy Werzer on Morning Edition. Abby goes to Kazakhstan for a rocket launch next week. And that's the NPR News Update for Wednesday. Thursday news right here tomorrow. I'm Phil. So long.